God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name. You are free to unmute if you like and say hello.
This is Nate. I'm within my first 30 days, so thank you for letting me join this evening.
Glad you're here, Nate.
Thanks.
All right. Anybody else?
My name's Cody. I'm an alcoholic. I got no days sober so far. So thanks.
All right. Welcome, Cody. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Anybody else? All right. I've opened up the chat so that people can post publicly to everyone. But if some of the dudes would like to submit their numbers, that'd be great. I'll do that as soon as we get the meeting off the ground. Anybody else, first 30 days? Really glad you all are here. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. So you guys are here on a good night. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight, we're talking about step one, part two. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We've got Dave G. and John M. from Richmond. So I will get us kicked off with we're not going to read you to death. We're just going to do a paragraph, and then I'll kick it over to John after I read this. So page five. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Brother John.
I'm John the Alcoholic. It's really friggin' awesome to be here. Love you guys. This is my first home group ever, and got sober in Norfolk. In fact, the first home group meeting I attended here was on David's couch, and then it grew. And you guys were gracious enough to welcome me into the group, and I got to make coffee as my first home group job. And by the way, the coffee makers at this home group, when you guys get back, are intense. They aren't those little dinky things. It's like a super complex system, but it was pretty cool that I was in charge of it. Again, I'm John Mason, alcoholic. Sobriety date is June 27th, 2012. Buford Road Group in Richmond is my home group. Love my home group. We meet Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. All are welcome to attend anytime you want. We are converting over to hybrid now. So We're just now starting to do in person as well as the simultaneous Zoom. I'll try not to take too much of Dave's time on these, but you know, these paragraphs are literally how I got sober. This is how my first sponsor took me through the steps. You know, I was required to read these chapters in advance of us meeting, but these were the paragraphs he would go over, and they sounded a lot different coming from him, hearing his experience with them versus what I just got the page as a knucklehead know-it-all coming into these rooms who had burned my life down. I thought I knew everything, but you know, this one's amazing because I did exactly this all the time. I would wake up with that resolve and I promised myself and my wife and everybody that this would stop. And I think the first few years of those promises, honestly, were really just to get the heat off in the back of my head. I knew I could go back to drinking and I'd find a way to do it like a gentleman. But the last couple of years of those promises, you know, I knew I cannot do this anymore. I just can't. And, you know, I even when I tried to drink like a gentleman, it talks about, first of all, this reading has two of the coolest things in it. When it talks about replaced by cocksureness and laughing at the gin mills, that just the seventh grader in me made me laugh when we first went over this. But, you know, I too, you know, I would go to a party and tell my wife I'd be home later. And, you know, this is when I was drinking. And then when I wasn't drinking, you know, I was committed, but I had that feeling, that thought in my mind that they describe right there, you know, at the very end. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I said, okay, I'm going to this party. I'm not going to drink, or even before I quote unquote quit drinking, I'm only going to have a couple beers. I'll be home by 9:30. And my phone would start ringing at 10:15, 10:00. And I would screen the calls. I looked down and be like, you know what? I'm already in just enormous amounts of trouble. Let's make this one count. Let's make stories and just have, you know, anthems playing in the background and make a video because I'm already in trouble. Tomorrow's going to be awful. The door may not be unlocked for me when I get home. So let's roll. And so I can relate exactly to all those promises. And then once caving, let's just make this count. You know, I'm not going to sit there and have this guilty feeling after two drinks and just say, okay, that's enough. Like, that was stupid. I can't believe I did that, and stop and go home. I can't do that. I don't have the choice to do that. I've got to roll. And that's what I did for years. And in my experience, I had years where I was drinking and I was trying to manage it. And then I had an extended period of time where I wasn't drinking and hiding it, which was incredibly ridiculous in and of itself. But everything that said, I, you know, I could have passed the lie detector test, honestly, every morning when I woke up with that resolve and I made those promises. And there were times where I had my wife or my daughters or my parents or my friends convinced that I meant it and it was going to be different this time. And it just repeated itself over and over again. With that, I'll pass it on to Dave.
Thanks, John. Brother Dave.
Hey, y'all. I'm Dave Graziano, alcoholic. Thank y'all for inviting me down here. This is cool, man. I would have liked to drum down to Norfolk and hang out, but this is going to have to fit the bill tonight. I got a sobriety date, July 28, 2012, and I've got the same, John and I go to the same home group, and we love it when people come in there from out of town, or especially guys like Cody. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3.5 years before I could get a sober day. And it takes a lot of courage to come in here and admit that. You know, Cody, I'm really glad that you're here. And if you're anything like me, two things nobody was telling me outside Alcoholics Anonymous was keep coming back. And I love you. And I do love you, Cody, and I mean it. Because I wasn't hearing that from my family, and people around me. I knew they loved me, but my behavior was not lovable. And John was saying, we did our first meeting at the home group on last Wednesday night, and I pulled in the church parking lot, and I was just overcome with emotion. I just started crying because it saved my life. People just like yourself, because you told me to keep coming back. It's a big deal to do like me, man. And I wasn't there once. I'm talking about 3.5 years. That's the only home group I've ever had. And I was the only drunk coffee guy that group's ever had that would admit to it. I was the first coffee guy they wouldn't give the money up to up front because I had drunk it up. And they was right, you know, man, because I don't know about y'all, but I'm powerless over alcohol, you know. And reading this part right here, man, about that, I never wrote any sweet promises, but I made some. And I remember my wife said to me one night or one morning, she said, that's it. If you come home drunk one more time, you're out. Right. And I told her, I said, baby, I swear I'll never do it again. And I think that I guess I meant it, but I don't have the power to do that. But I don't know that. Because I think I'm drinking because I want to drink, because I like drinking. You know, but that ship had sailed a long time. I went to my first AA meeting in 1990. I didn't get any less alcoholic from 1990 to 2012, I can assure you. And I told her I wouldn't do it no more. And it was a Wednesday. And I come home from that night from my AA meeting in a blackout. Because I'm powerless over alcohol. The same as I am sitting here today. I don't have the power to do it. If I did, I'd be in there eating macaroni and cheese and steak, but I don't. So I gotta wait, you know, man. And that renewing my resolve part, you know, man, for a guy like me, this part of the book, I never had any sober days before I got sober. I drank every day, and I drank all day. And a lot of it's foggy. And I'm sure I might have said some stuff about that, what I wanted to do. I don't specifically remember that. I knew I needed to stop drinking. But I don't think in the back of my mind I really wanted to. Because a guy like me, if that's all I know, that's all I know. And I don't know nothing about not drinking. But I know enough that Alcoholics Anonymous is where you go when you don't want to drink. And that's why they keep telling me, and I always ask them, because some dudes told me, you know, and I went to a lot of meetings when I was drinking, and some guys told me to go try some controlled drinking like the book talks about. But a couple guys in the home group, I asked them when I got sober, I said, why'd y'all kids tell me to keep coming back? And they said, we knew that you wanted it, you just couldn't get there. You know, so I'm gonna stop for now.
All right. Thank you, guys. We're going to move on to reading number 2, continues on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly. Even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. John?
All right, sorry, I'm still a little trouble muting there. you know, self-knowledge is that was always, you know, from an early age, what drove me. And today I realize it's what gets me in trouble more than anything. And, you know, if you had tried to explain that to me when I first came in, I wouldn't have understood that. Because you know, I could see what it was talking about here. I could do all these things. If I put my mind to it, I could make straight A's in school. And I did, when I put my mind to it. I could build a shed. I could work, you know, 60-hour weeks and trying to work my way up, you know, through the company. I could do all these things. But why does it not work when it comes to this? Like, I don't understand that. And it said the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. I purely just chalk that up to, you know, some self-deprecating, like, I'm just a weak person. Woe is me. Like, just self-pity. I'm weak. Like, why can't I mean, I can do all these other things whenever I put my mind to it or the effort, and I can't do this. But what it talks about, you know, in the paragraph before that is, you know, and the preceding chapter is what helped me kind of get past this. You know, when I finally came in here and started working with the sponsor, and the sponsor is reading these paragraphs to me, is this is a disease, you know, and that helped me. Because I needed some sort of explanation as to why my self-will, my self-knowledge does not work in this one particular area. I felt like I could apply it and apply it as hard as I could in just about every other facet of my life and get the results I wanted or some sort of results, but not here. And, you know, Bill's referencing here, you know, he, for 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town, ready to make a little money. I didn't have any extended periods of 3 or 4 months, but I do recall, you know, I was a daily drinker the last few years, and the time I started drinking got earlier and earlier and earlier until it was really just 24/7. You know, if I woke up in the middle of the night, I could not go back to sleep without a drink. But I remember. And I was always very careful about it when I was drinking because I knew everybody was watching and counting. And I don't know about you guys, but that makes me mad. That just drives me good. That makes me more irritable and discontent, knowing that somebody is counting the drinks that I'm having. So I remember I was literally, it was before Christmas, and we were getting a puppy. As you know, Santa was getting a puppy. And I was driving, somehow we chose this breeder in South Carolina. And I drove down and spent the night. And I remember, nobody's counting my drinks tonight. Nobody. I got in the hotel. I got like a 12-pack of beer. And I made sure I was in walking distance of the you know, the gas station or whatever next door, so I could get more when I ran out. And I drank 2 beers. And I just fell asleep. And I woke up like it was like the most amazing accomplishment in the world. I went from being, you know, concerned in the back of my head, do I have a problem? And I really think I've drank every day of my life for the last 3 years. Like, I don't know, to like, I got this. I mean, I just drank 2 beers and just decided to quit on my own. It was, I got no problems. The coast is clear. We're good. We're good. And literally, you know, 3 days later with a new puppy, I'm vomiting in the front yard. And I don't know if you guys remember Norfolk, but it was that year we had the giant snow the day after Christmas, just pounding Goldschlager and all this stuff. It's a happy family moment. This little puppy running around and dad's vomiting in the snow, in the daylight, in the front yard. So all of that, the goose hung high. Well, you know, it hung high for about 24 hours and it was just an anomaly. I happened to fall asleep, I think, because I was so physically exhausted, you know, after two, you know, driving 8 hours and 2 beers. It was not a conscious decision to stop drinking after 2 beers, but I thought it was one of the most spectacular things in the world. But that self-knowledge thing, I think I can find a way to drink differently or do this or drink in this method, and I can manage it. I can figure it out. And this is one case in my life where self-knowledge did nothing but prove to me in a very painful way and progressing way that I got no power here. And all I can think about is the next drink and how I'm going to get it and making sure I have enough. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, John. Yeah, and I think in this paragraph, like you said, the paragraph before, I think it's when he had gone to see Dr. Silkworth, and I was with a dude today. We're reading the doctor's opinion, you know, and it talked. I remember reading that about the physical allergy, right? And once I started taking it, it's over, you know, and that made sense to me. Because I used to lie and be like, I'd be sitting in the bar and it was that second beer, right? Okay. Something like that. That's what I'd rationalize with myself. But I went to a IOP and found out that I was physically addicted to alcohol. So they put me on this medicine over like 4 days. It weaned me off alcohol. And I got cleared out on a Friday. And I felt awesome, right? I didn't have any alcohol in my system whatsoever. And I've been messing around in AA, you know, at that point anyway, and talking with this therapist and all this stuff. I guess he's a doctor, I don't remember. And giving me the information about what I have, alcoholism, and now I'm free from alcohol. I'm like, man, this is awesome. So I went to a meeting at this homeless shelter the next day at noon. And I was coming up Midlothian Turnpike, man. And I said, man, some cold beer sure would hit the spot. And bam, right into 7-Eleven I went, you know. And it's one of those things that I don't even know. I know now because I've written stuff down and I've talked to people like me. And a lot of it makes sense now. But in the minute, it doesn't make any sense at all, you know. And we talk about, I don't know which is worse, no hope or false hope, you know? So I'm going to an IOP, you know, dad's on the mend, you know, my husband's on the mend. My parents are like, oh, our son's coming back. And that particular time they had all gone to the beach without me. And my family's really tight, really tight. And they went down on that Saturday and I got drunk that Saturday night. So I got the genius idea to roll down to the beach Sunday morning, right? When they talk about like you're talking about everybody be excited to see me because I'm delusional. I think everybody still thinks I'm a great guy, which at the time I was not. And I drank the whole way down to the beach down in Nag's Head. And I remember I walked into they had a pool at the beach house and I opened the fence. And I come walking in with my hands up like, I'm here, right? And my wife is sitting in the pool. And there were some other people sitting around the pool when I got that look, you know? If you're a dude like me, you know what that look is. I mean, just complete and utter disdain, disgust, right? And I'm like looking at them like, what? And they're like, I mean, I got a brother drinking himself to death, man. So I know what that looks like. You know what I mean? It's not cool. And the funny thing about active alcoholism, nothing. It's just not funny. It's not cute. It's not cool, man. And you know, that when it says that one line, my incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained, you know, over time, I realized, man, that I just can't stop. I can't stop today. I couldn't stop then. You know what I mean? Because not only do I have a disease, I got a spiritual malady and I got a mental obsession, you know, that's all I think about. I was talking with my buddy today and I said, I might have been at my kid's basketball game, which I was, but what I was concerned with was that were they going to realize that it was Gatorade and vodka, right? I'm a great dad. Oh, you're taking the kids to the playground, right? Because who's going to drink with their kid at the playground? This guy, you know what I mean? I like the cover, right? Because it's all I can think about, but I don't know that until I sit around other alcoholics who are in recovery who explain it to me. You know, they pick apart the book, they share their own experience. And oh, me, you know, the book sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, you know, a dude like me takes time. You know, I picked up some things quicker than others. This was a slow pull for a guy like me, you know, but the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is it's there and it's going to be there. And whether the guy's talking to me or he's talking to some dude named Rob, he's carrying the same message, right? We just carry the message. Bam, what works, what works, what works, you know? And that's all I got on that. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I never made any money neither.
I never kept any. page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer don't crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. John. Oh, John.
There we go. Got it.
You're not a co-host. That's the problem.
That's all right.
I made Jason a co-host instead of you. Bam. There you go.
Jason,
brother.
Just unlock me when I need to speak.
I got you. You're there.
All right. This one, I could give you millions of examples. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and give you one or two, because when I first came in these rooms, like Cody, Nate, Marcus, congrats on your 41 days. Like, there were people talking about drinking. And when they were talking about drinking the way I drank, I started listening. Now, they were also talking about the solution, which I wasn't so quite ready to hear. But when people were talking about drinking the way I did and the tragedies, and they were laughing, you know, Dave mentioned active alcoholism isn't funny. I wasn't laughing, but they were laughing. That piqued my interest. That began that, you know, the identification of one alcoholic to another. And, you know, when we first moved to Norfolk, you know, like a lot of people that have young kids, we met people through our young kids at the park or whatever. And we ended out to dinner with a bunch of couples we didn't know, because we had met them through kids, you know, little kids in the playground. And the dads decided to go out afterwards. I'm like, yeah, I'll go out, you know. And I lived right there in Larchmont. We decided they were going to go bar hopping on bikes. It's beautiful. And I mean, I got just destroyed. I mean, there's a Mexican family restaurant that I think probably still exists right there on campus. It turned into a big party that night. I got blackout. Some of the guys' wives came back up to hang out. I'm groping them. I don't even know these people. This is my first introduction. I remember walking outside the bar at one point. I had to go to the bathroom, so I proceeded to turn towards the bar and urinate all over the window. A giant bouncer came out, was about ready to pummel me. One of these guys I just first met came out and saved me from getting pummeled. Somehow I made it back in the bar. Then I left, decided I'd had too much, crashed my bike into a police station a block away, and ended up in jail. And, you know, I'm really new to the area. I don't even know my home phone number. So my one call in jail, like, isn't happening. And my wife is reaching out to these people she just met to say, where's my husband? At 3:34 in the morning, people are driving around looking for me. She figures it out. Gets me out. And I'm crying like a baby. Like, I can't believe I've done this at age 32 or whatever it is. Oh my God. You know, she's driving me home. She's disgusted. I did ask her to stop by the 7-Eleven to get a beer so I could just take the nip off. But her mom was on her way to visit us. We go home. We get home. She takes a pregnancy test. We find out we're pregnant with our second daughter. This is how I've created the, you know, unforgettable moment that we are about to have our second child. My mother-in-law is coming any minute. We got to hide the evidence of all this stuff. I mean, literally, my wife is destroyed. I'm destroyed. I go to work the next, you know, Monday. People are talking about it in the elevator, in the office. I mean, just horrified. I can't ever, like, I just want to hide. I will never drink again. 5 days, guys. 5 days later, it's going to be different this time. I'm going to go out for happy hour with these guys. I mean, 5 days. That's all it took. And that was a long time at that point. Things really heated up a few years later. I mean, I had no defense against the first drink. And I was talking to somebody about this last night. My whole life was like the old cheesy horror movies, you know, the babysitter is home alone and like the ominous music is happening. And of course she's walking towards like the dark closet. And everybody's watching, like, I know what's going to happen. Don't walk in the closet. Don't do that. That was everybody around me watching my life. I'm living it. It is so obvious what's going to happen every single time that I don't have that defense against the first drink. Yeah, nobody can convince me. And I can't see it myself. I'm living this bad horror movie. And, you know, the hot stove thing is a great, great example. But I was touching that hot stove. I was just, give me more. Even though I would swear it would never happen again when I'm, you know, in that fetal position, freaking out from the night before or 2 days earlier. It was just unbelievable. And when my sponsor read this to me and explained it to me, it was just like, wow, like I was living that life. How did I not see that? I just came here and started talking to you guys because I was so freaking miserable. I tried everything else. This was not, you know, I didn't come in here on a winning streak and this is not where I wanted to end up. With you fine young men and women. But, you know, him explaining that to me, it was, yep, it must have been obvious to everyone. And, you know, this goes back to something Dave said. I could not stop drinking for anyone. I could not stop drinking for my wife, my beautiful young girls, my parents, my coworkers, nobody. I had to hit misery and pain. For one reason or another, I'm an alcoholic that only responds to pain. And it was just amazing. It was just amazing. But now, you know, when I've got some, you know, a little bit of time on my belt and I work this program, I'll be honest, there's the occasional fleeting moment like, oh, that beer over there looks pretty good. They never had that kind of beer when I was drinking. And my mind now does play for it. Okay, what's going to happen is you're going to take that drink. It's going to turn into 17 drinks. You're going to grab Jacob's wife's private parts. You're going to throw up in the bushes. Your wife's going to like, boom, got it, done. That thought's out of my mind. But I wasn't capable of processing and playing it forward back then. I just had to live it out. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, John. Yeah, and the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. I'll tell you a statement that just about killed me, literally, was why me, right? Everybody in my family drinks. They drink a lot. Like I said, my one brother's drinking himself to death. Like if he makes it through the year, I'll be surprised. That being said, I've said that before, so I don't know. But everybody, to the point where my sponsor was talking to my parents and my wife, and my dad said, he said, does this mean we can't have wine at Sunday dinner? You know what I mean? And when I got my first year chip, we were at the beach and my mom was like, would it be okay if we toasted, you know, everybody have a good drink. Hey, Dave, sober here. You know what I mean? But they don't drink like I drink, you know, sometimes they do, but they don't have the staying power. You know what I mean? And so I'm saying to my sponsor, I'm like, why me? Why me? Why I got to be the alcoholic? I mean, I live right where I grew up at and everybody I know who's not in AA drinks. And they drink a lot, you know. Why me? And he finally said, I'll wear this dude out. I tell you, I love him. I talked to him the other day, man. He's awesome. But he was a lot cooler since I stopped drinking. I can tell you that's for sure. But he said, if your house was on fire, would you want to get out of the house and live? Or would you want to stick around and figure out what caused the fire? And for some reason, that's one of those little kinks in a dude like me's armor. You know what I mean? Like the guys in AA just kind of chipping at it, you know, because I couldn't get it. I couldn't eat it in one big ball, man. I had to take a little spoonfuls at a time. And, you know, talking about things that like a guy that I will do with things that I'll do is my wife's stepfather passed away and my sister-in-law was down for the funeral and she lost her mom when she was real young. So I guess her mom was like 40, 45. And so after the funeral, everybody's back at the house. And I was a beer drinker, man, for the most part. But I was big timing it that day. They had a little bar set up, man. I was working at Baca pretty good, man, and holding court and blah, 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 all that nonsense. And I blacked out and she came up to me and my wife and a few other people were standing there. And she said, you know, all my mom's friends were telling me how I looked just like my mother. Right? That's beautiful. So what do I say? I say, yeah, except for the dirt on you, except for the dirt on her face. You know what I mean? That's just what I do. Because when I drink, I just don't care. The drinking gets rid of my conscience, you know? And that, I mean, that didn't even keep me sober. I mean, I got in a bunch of nonsense, not nonsense. I caught a lot of flack for that, deservedly so. But it didn't keep me sober through the day. I felt bad about it. But you know, I was at work and I was thirsty, man. So I just started drinking, you know, and then it says in here, if these thoughts occur, right? If these thoughts occur, they didn't to me. They didn't. I mean, I just drank, dude. I mean, that's it. I don't know. You know, I love the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it helped save my life. And it's not all, and I have to remember this too. They didn't write this book for me. They didn't put every word in here to reach me. But there's enough in here that reaches me. But I just didn't have, I'm just not the guy that thinks about drinking. I just drink, you know, and what did y'all keep telling me? I said, ask God to keep, when you wake up in the morning, ask God to keep you sober for the day. And I'm keep telling them, dude, I can't get the whole day. I can't not drink the whole day. Not understanding that's not what they're saying. You know, and that morning that I did get sober, I asked the God of my understanding at that time to keep me sober for 45 minutes. Because I thought that's all the power that he could pull. You know. But I sponsor guys and I talk with dudes. I'm in a restaurant recovery group that's not affiliated with AA. And those guys in there, they've stopped drinking. And I tell them like this, what it says right here, man, we were without defense against the first drink. I said, man, just not drinking has an expiration date on it. Right. And they go, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, the hard part about it is it's a fact based off my experience. If you're a real alcoholic. The hardest part about it is there's no number. Could be 30 days, could be 3 days. I'm sponsoring a dude right now. He did 5 years. And then he was at a bar in Mexico and ended up almost dying. You know, there's just no expiration. There's an expiration date that nobody knows because it's different for everybody. You know, so it's a motivator for a guy like me to understand that I'm without defense against the first drink. Every bit on July 28, 2012, as I am sitting here right now. You know what I mean? And I don't know. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. All right, we're going to pick it up on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. John?
Yeah, so the first paragraph that was read here, when I read it by myself, even when I read it with my sponsor, it insulted me, right? Like, no person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Yeah, that's suggesting I'm inferior. That's suggesting that he or she is better than me. I mean, at least in my head, that's the way I read it by myself. But that's why I had to have a sponsor and have somebody that's got experience with this, with a sponsor, explain it to me. And you know, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue into the gates of insanity or death. That's where I was going, and that's where I got. You know, I thought daily about committing suicide. I really didn't want to deal with the discomfort of doing it, but I planned all these things. I created a little spreadsheet for my wife where the accounts were, and there's really no money, but here's a little bit of life insurance. And what you need to do is, you know, you can pay off the house, half a college for both kids, but you got to get remarried in 18 months. You know, I had written that in a secret little sheet. And I love it when it talks about, you know, it said we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. I used to drive around Norfolk, and there was some, I think I was listening to either Howard Stern or Sports Radio, something on Sirius Radio. And this damn commercial would always come on. You know, it was one of those recovery places. I think it was a for-profit thing, but they played it all the time. And it made me so angry. I would just be driving, it would come on, and I would just slam the volume down or change the station. I just didn't want to hear it because I knew there was a problem, but I wasn't ready to, you know, fully admit. I mean, I was delusional. And that had to be smashed. It's kind of funny. Am I bodily and mentally different from my fellows? Hell yeah, I am. I mean, now it's kind of funny. I can sit there with my wife at night and she's having a glass of wine, or, you know, we get, you know, at home or at a restaurant, whatever. And she pours out half of him. Like, what are you doing? You psycho. That's crazy. Or like, oh, no more for me. Thanks. I'm starting to feel it. Starting to feel it. That's where you put the pedal to the metal and let's go. I mean, do it for me. Let me just watch. Like, you're doing it wrong. And the most offensive thing to me, and she loves to do it, I think she does it just to get a rise out of me, is she's had a glass of wine at a restaurant and the server will come back, you know, can I get you guys more drink? Yeah, yes, please. I'll take my fifth Diet Coke because I like to drink Diet Coke alcoholically. And she's like, is there any way I could just get a half glass of wine and pay for just a half? I'm like, that, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for me to listen to you. But she's a normie. She's not like me. She's not obsessed, and she's not, you know, it's delusional to think that everybody thinks about alcohol the way I do. They don't. They don't. I am physically and mentally different from, you know, 90% of my fellows. And, you know, most of the other 10% are probably honestly just heavy drinkers. You know, I used to think I didn't do anything differently than the guys I rolled around with. Well, we alcoholics have a tendency to find people like us, right? But they weren't all excited the next day to get after it again. They were hemming and hawing about how bad they felt. And I was in tears that we weren't drinking again. Like, it can't be over. And it says that, you know, it talks about, and I have this underlined and circled like 100 times, all of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to, and nobody could have said this, to reading this, it was the best words to describe it. It led to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. You know, I went from, I was a drinker to I was, you know, not drinking. My not drinking lasted about 6 months, and just that's where it progressed like so rapidly. And yeah, I wasn't getting caught, at least not red-handed. There might've been suspicions, but I mean, I found myself on the couch one day, having called in to work sick, and I'm just, I've lost it. I can't keep up with the lies, to cover the lies, to cover the lies to my wife, to my children, to my work. Like, I can't remember what I told you last night. And I'm going on offense in the morning because you're acting like I don't remember. And I was just exhausted. My brain was done. I was emotionally, mentally, physically bankrupt, toast. And that, you know, it was that moment on the couch. My wife came home after work. She, you know, I hope you're feeling better. Go start fixing dinner. And I get up and I've been drinking vodka all day. And I call my sister in Richmond and say, I can't stop drinking. I have a problem. Can you come help me? And I remember my wife coming out of the kitchen, looking at me just with the death glare, like, did I just hear you effing say that? And I looked at her and I just walked upstairs and passed out. And still the next morning, you know, when you wake up and your eyes aren't open yet and you're like, please tell me that didn't happen. Please tell me that didn't happen. I had that feeling. Please tell me that didn't happen. That was an overreaction. I didn't really make that phone call. And I opened my eyes and there's my sister and there's my wife. My wife is disgusted. She grabs the kid, takes him to daycare. And that's when, you know, my sister, who's not an alcoholic, didn't know what to do. Just got out her phone, found Intergroup in Norfolk, and found me my first meeting at the Easy Does It Center at noon. And I started hearing you guys talking about drinking, and I identified in. But it wasn't until I experienced that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I couldn't put it in those words myself. But when I heard him, it was, that's it. That's what I needed in order to do something different. And that's what I felt. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, John. It's been pointed out to me that big part of the first 164 is trying to convince a guy like me, you know, different examples and situations like that, you know. And this guy got me at a meeting one time, this guy, Tom F. If you're ever in Richmond, Take It or Leave It is the name of the meeting. It's a big book meeting on Tuesday nights. Those guys are awesome, man. And he sat me down because I used to always read this part about more about alcoholism, right? And he said that the delusion that we were like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. And he stopped and he pointed at that word, smashed. He said, it doesn't say covered up. Doesn't say ripped up. It says smashed, you know? And that was a big part for me, you know, because that sentence before, this is the first step in recovery. And this was after I've been in it, you know, coming to AA for a while. And like I said, man, it was wearing me down watching all these other people turn their lives around. And I'm still in the same spot, you know, and because, and they talk about it in the spiritual experience, you know, that I need to have willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness, you know, and that's just something that's tough for a guy like me. But over time, man, it did the deal, man. And it says, we're convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. And that's a sentence that I like to share with guys. You know, I said, when they're hemming and hawing about doing the four step, you know, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And if you're a dude like me, they used to tell me, dude, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And you're like, worse? worse than this? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, I don't know about that. And then 2 months later, you're like, oh my God, it is getting worse. You know, because the progressiveness of it takes a guy from me like drinking 15, 18 beers a day to all of a sudden I'm drinking 2 pints of vodka a day to all of a sudden I'm drinking 3. You know, you think you're drinking a lot. I thought I was drinking a lot, but I had no idea that I had that much more capability in me, you know. And the countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. I mean, I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic. You know what I cared how other people were drinking? Not even remotely. I wasn't trying to put on a face for my alcoholism. Was I trying to hide it from my family? Obviously, that's how I got into the vodka, right? Because I'd get off work and I would drink. I can drink 12. I don't know if I could today, but I hope I never find out. But I could drink 12 beers in 45 minutes, right? But I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a litter bug. So I come home from work and I got these 12 bottles in my truck and I don't know what to do with them. So I started drinking vodka and I didn't know anything about drinking vodka, but my pops always drank Smirnoff. So I would go in a liquor store and I'd buy a pint of Smirnoff and talking to the little lady at the counter. And she was like, it's funny how you hear stuff like this. But she said, sweetie, she said, you can buy 2 of those Odessas for the same price as that one Smirnoff and it all tastes the same anyway. I was like, hell yeah. You know what I mean? So then it was off like, now I got a tie on tonight. I never drank Aristocrat. But I'm saying, you know, I was just that guy that I was drinking because I'm powerless over alcohol, right? Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Fortunately and unfortunately for Alcoholics Anonymous men, I've seen people recover and I've seen people not make it, you know, and I keep referencing my brother, man, but sometimes he gets up in my heart, not in my head, but in my heart, you know, man. And he doesn't have a kink in the armor to this point. And I know for a fact that I'm either going to die with alcoholism or from alcoholism. You know what I mean? And I'll take with it as opposed to from it, you know. And it talks about it too, man. We're bodily and mentally different from our fellows. I got 2 dudes in my life I've known my whole life. One of them, 5 years ago, I seen him in the hospital and he told me, he said, they said, if I ever drink again, I'm dead. He's been to 3 rehabs and right now currently is drinking about a 0.5 gallon a day. Right. And he's still alive. Another buddy of mine's brother, 97, he was in intensive care down in Miami. My buddy flew down there and they said, he ain't coming out of here. And he's still, I see him walking around today, you know? And it makes me realize that they got the same thing I got. They got the exact same thing that I got. If it wasn't for people like y'all on this meeting, I wouldn't be here. It's plain and simple. Because when I got sober, my body was shutting down. My spirit was dead. My sponsor always says I was just like a shell, man. He said, you looked me right in the eyes and there was nothing. Nothing. I can't play around with this thing. Me and Dave was talking before the meeting, man. I love comedy and stuff like that, man. But this is life and death. And I can get emotional about it. Because I think about my brother and I beat myself up about it for a long time in AA. Why me and not him? It's not for me to decide. It's just not. Anybody that comes to a meeting, dude, you got a shot. You got a shot at a decent life. Not a guarantee, but you got a shot. And the book talks about, man, we want you just please stick around. Please, for one reason. we've been right where you are. Everybody in here had been sober one day. Everybody here had been not sober a day. And we get it, man. And we're here for you. And we love you. And thank y'all for letting me be here tonight. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, John. That was awesome. Unfortunately, we're out of time. It's worth mentioning if you're new. Step one is not a feel good step. It's the problem step. There's 11 more that all contain hope. So come back. Let's let Bill Wilson have the last word here on page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare occasions, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Thank you guys again for everything. That was awesome. I'm going to do the seventh tradition here. I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to get this thing down one day. All right, I'm posting a link. I usually get that all queued up, but I am behind. There is a link. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Anybody? Well, we got the regular concepts workshop coming up this Wednesday. All of these are on tidewaterintergroup.org. Wednesday, 7 p.m. The links are at tidewaterintergroup.org. We've got Michaeline coming in from, she's a past delegate from the state of Virginia. Every month throughout 2021 on the fourth Wednesday of the month, we're doing the concept of the month. Do you know what the concepts are? Neither do I. That's why we're having a workshop. So we're going to do concept four on Wednesday. So come out for that. And this group is super excited to announce, somebody help me. Anybody got the stats on that? Is it June 2nd? I've already forgotten.
June 2nd, 7 p.m. Polly P. And the reason I didn't announce this, I keep forgetting her son's name, but it's Polly and her son are doing a family afterward workshop that Simple Actions is hosting. And that will be, 7 p.m. The info should be getting up on tidewaterintergroup.org.
Yeah, June thanks, 2nd, Mo.
7.
Yeah, Wednesday, June 2nd. We're super excited about it. It's a mother and son combo, Polly P and her son James. Between the two of them, they got about 60 years of recovery, and they do a nice little workshop called The Family Afterward. Really looking forward to that. So more will be revealed on that one. All right. Anybody else? Anybody think of one while I was running my mouth? Simple Actions is home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. And closing, can we thank our wonderful panel again? Dave and John, that was awesome. Thank all who participated. Everybody can unmute after the Lord's Prayer or for the Lord's Prayer and say thank you to John and Dave again. And I'm looking for my sister Leanne to maybe read the last three paragraphs on page 164, please.
Sure. My name's Lee and I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. You shall be with us in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I think that's what it says. I couldn't see it.
Thank you, Leanne. All right, everybody, let's circle up. Feel free to unmute. Let's have a confusing, static-filled version of the Lord's Prayer all together.
Cacophony.
Cacophony. That's a tasty word, isn't it? Moment of silence. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom be thy name. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory,
forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
Amen. Woohoo! Thank you, boys.
Great stuff, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, dude.
That was awesome. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
That was so. Welcome, Mark.